Tara.
Hey, Taz.
How's it going?
I'm excited for Good Muslim, Bad Muslim, number 8.
Oh my gosh, is that where we're at right now?
That's where we're at. Actually, we're at the San Francisco Writer's Grotto.
Yeah.
Thank you again to the San Francisco Writer's Grotto for this space.
It's a fabulous space. It's soundproof, and it's making us cough and sneeze. So if you hear a little bit of sniffles, we're managing our allergies here. And we're so excited. We're in San Francisco. I'm up here. I'm in town, actually, for Bay Area Solidarity Summer. I was doing a training this past weekend, and it was amazing. We had another batch of 20 young South Asian activist youth. We were training them out in Oakland, and it was the fifth year we did it. And I'm just so proud of the program and having been a part of it for 5 years.
I've seen the program in action before.
I know. Everyone kept talking about it because I don't know if you remember this, but we recorded our practice run podcasts at BASE a couple years ago. So I think it was about 3 years ago before. I know our podcast has only been around since January, but everyone at BASE was like, oh, wow, I remember when you and Zara were practice recording in our at BASE. So there's that. We have a podcast memory. Connected to BASE.
I totally forgot about that.
I know. It's the secret archives of Good Muslim, Bad Muslim.
How was it? Have you heard it?
I think I lost it because I'm really bad with tech, so it kind of accidentally got deleted. But yay, BASE. I'm very excited. For other folks that are interested in joining solidarity camps, there's one in the East Coast, there's one in Chicago, and you can sign up to be a part of BASE next year. It's going to be happening again.
Were you in BASE?
I wasn't in BASE. BASE was the camp that we created that I wish I had when I was a young person. When I was a young person, I had no political Daisy thing at all.
But you were a punk.
I was punk, but I wasn't. I had no way of like really understanding what progressive politics meant. So I'm just really excited that we get to provide this space for young people now.
It's a pretty rad space.
Yeah.
It's exactly like you said. It's the camp that I wish that I had.
Yeah.
But there are no guys in it, right? It's all...
There were some guys this year.
Is that, like, do you usually have a higher ratio of young girls than young boys?
Yeah, isn't that weird? We have a higher ratio of young women who come through BASE, but I think that's just self-selection. It was pretty balanced this year. But yes, we're excited. I'm jazzed. What's going on in your life?
I am still married to my infidel husband. I think it's funny that people get us confused, so I feel obligated to say that.
So that's Zara and her infidel husband. Taz is still single. Still single.
Still single.
Still single.
I genuinely am incredibly frustrated because I commute between three cities because I live way hella far out from the city and go like between three cities with no car.
I'm so impressed with you that you don't have a car and that you're able to pull this off.
I'm just annoyed.
Yeah, I imagine you're annoyed.
I'm just annoyed. Like when you asked me, I was like, how do I genuinely respond to that? And I was like, genuinely, I'm just really frustrated, and I hate not having a car. Even though it's good for the environment, I hate not having my car.
I'm still proud of you.
Thanks, Taz. Glow.
And we both just got back from New York, where we've had a busy summer traveling. We recorded our last podcast there. What was New York like for you?
It was a whirlwind. I remember BuzzFeed.
Right.
And I remember BuzzFeed.
You don't remember performing? Your performance was hilarious.
My performance just like a distant memory. It like flew by and it happened and it was awesome and it was so fun. And Yahoo News was there. They were recording with like HBO ready cameras, which was exciting. I got to meet Maysoon Saeed, who I like was, you know, always crushing on. And I didn't get to meet Nagin Farsad. I was so upset. We were recording at the same time.
She's funny.
I know. And then I met Dino Badala.
Dean's amazing.
Yeah, we have a crush on Dean.
Yeah, he's so smart.
And who else did I get? I got to meet the guys from Allah Made Me Funny.
We had two of them open for our show.
That was so awesome. And I got to meet Dina Haysham. I think it's funny that she likes the Jersey version of her last name. It was so cool. And you can hear it on our last episode. Actually, you can't. Just kidding. You should have been there. They performed for us. They did stand up for us. And then we recorded our show, and it went so well. I really want to do that again. I want to do it in Chicago.
Yeah, a lot of people have been asking us to come do shows after they heard about the New York one. So that we've had, there's been interest in Michigan and D.C., and we were hoping we can get a show going in San Francisco and Chicago, too. So if you are in one of these cities, you're interested in bringing us out, we'd love to come out. So invite us.
It's hella fun.
BuzzFeed was so cool. So we actually know Ahmed Ali Akbar at BuzzFeed because he was in the book Salam Love. We're in the book Love Inshallah. So because of that, we were connected to him. So he invited us into the BuzzFeed space. And it was very hard to keep a chill demeanor. I tried to act cool. I was like, yeah, I'm fine. I'm cool.
Yeah, I was gushing kind of.
Yeah. I was like, oh my gosh, I'm at BuzzFeed.
And I was super insecure because I didn't get to blow out my hair.
Oh, right. Because it's very humid there.
Oh, my God. It was cool to be at BuzzFeed.
It was so cool to be at BuzzFeed. So we did this piece about, we gave advice, because you and I are so amazing at giving advice. We gave advice on Muslim dating.
Really good advice. Solid advice.
We gave some solid advice.
And really good comebacks.
Right. Because advice and comebacks are the same thing. We had an awesome time at the BuzzFeed studio, and we're going to read you some of our favorite ones.
He says, I really dig you, but my situation is really complicated.
You're paying for dinner, right?
Give me your wallet. Are Muslims allowed to have sex?
Where do you think babies come from?
You sound like a really bad lay. You're on a first date. You start talking politics, dude says. You know what? They should just bomb Iran back to the Stone Age.
Fuck that guy.
Let's do it like it is the Stone Age.
You know what I also love about this one? Is that everyone's read fuck that guy and they're like, do you mean like fuck that guy? Or do you mean like fuck that guy? I was like, it's Taz. What do you think it's gonna mean? I was like, of course it's gonna be fuck that guy. Not like go fuck that guy. Because if I was gonna say go fuck that guy, I would have said go in front of it. Anyways. Super tangent. I just don't understand how people thought that I could have meant any other thing besides fuck that guy.
What I love about that is that you, again, by association with me, are getting into trouble. Because I say, shh, let's do it like it is the Stone Age. And you're like, yeah, fuck that guy.
Is that what I sound like?
Awkward. You swipe right, he swipes right. Texting is going fine. Then he sends you a completely unsolicited dick pic.
Does it get bigger?
Say thanks. Your first date goes great, but you decide not to go home with him. He starts ghosting completely.
Go to his house. So those were our favorite questions that were asked of us at BuzzFeed. I think dating is really complicated. As a single woman who's Muslim, who's trying to date, I think it's really complicated. And you always get asked like stupid, stupid questions. So the best way to respond is with, you know, humor.
Or sometimes you get asked really hot questions that are just like put in a way that's like not racist though, right?
Never.
But like sometimes, like if he like... is like, hey, I am going to marry you and I have a job with excellent benefits.
Oh my gosh, that's so sexy.
Right? Anytime I hear a guy has health benefits, I'm like,
Does he have a 401k also? Hot.
Exactly.
I know. Taste changes over the years.
Like, I feel like guys should just be walking around with, like, shirts that say 401k.
So hot.
So hot. I'm into that.
So for our listeners, if any of you are looking for dating advice, we do take questions. So send us your questions. We will answer them. We love answering questions. You can go to goodmuslimbadmuslim.com. We have a little contact form. Send us your questions. We'll try the best that we can. We also love like hearing about terrible dating experience. So if you go on a terrible date and it's super microaggressive and patriarchal and white supremacy, tell us about it. I want to hear all about it.
Yes, please. Do you want to know what I want to hear all about?
my period?
Yes. How did you know that?
Because it's all over the news. Kiran Gandhi, one of my favorite musicians that is Daisy. We write about her all the time on Mishti Music. She just ran a marathon.
On her period without a tampon.
I know. I think it's, and it got a lot of media, which is kind of surprising because I, like women get periods all the time. I don't know why this is newsworthy.
Because she's running 26 miles and it's summertime in England and she's bleeding everywhere.
Yeah, but when you look at the picture, it's not like it's bleeding that much down her leg. It's not like...
Could you see it? I couldn't see it. I looked for it.
Yeah, you can see it. It's just, it was maybe like 4 inches down the inside of her inner thigh. And that was like it. And then she was like, she had a longish shirt. But it, everyone, apparently, there's been a lot of articles about it. She's been interviewed a lot about it. People have been, were coming up to her during the marathon. They're like, did you know that you're bleeding? And she's like, yeah, I do. I bet that was a man that said that, by the way. Just get, like, they're, you know, women are know when they're bleeding.
And also, when it's there, you know.
Yeah. When it's there, you know.
You're like, oh,
I thought, and I think what was really interesting was that the whole reason why she ran the marathon without a tampon is because she got her period the night before. And I was thinking, I don't run unless I'm being chased. And the whole reason why she did it is like, yeah, if you have a tampon in you for 26 miles, that's like 5 hours, you could get toxic shock syndrome,
oh,
right?
Oh, whoa, I didn't know. Oh, because if you have the tampon in that long.
Mm-hmm. Because you're supposed to change it. And then, of course, it's going to ruin her time, right? Because she's running and she doesn't want to stop. So I was just thinking about all these things that she probably had to think about the night before. And I read one comment that said that she was kind of like just trying to get a lot of media attention, which I don't think is really fair. And the other one was that, she should have just used a diva cup. And I was just like, well, maybe it was the night before and she just got her period and she didn't really plan what she was going to do, you know?
Have you ever used a diva cup?
No, I'm really scared of using a diva cup because where does it go?
I have been in toilets in the aftermath of a diva cup.
Oh.
It's scary. A little bit of a murder scene.
Like,
but then
it's
I don't
a cup.
I don't want to say scary because I'm like, don't, that's a woman's period.
Have you tried using a diva cup?
No, I haven't. But I do have a lot of friends who, when they have, like, endometriosis or, like, you know, fibroids there or cysts or whatever, it's painful. And the diva cup seems to help that, actually.
That's interesting.
I heard this.
I hear that some women also use natural sponges, which also sounds like it would be really messy.
I am a really big fan of throw it away and flush it. I can't do it.
There's a drought going on here. You shouldn't be flushing the toilet that much.
I can't. Pee with others. I can't do it. I can't do it. I'm killing California. I can't do it. I can't do it. Taz is like staring me down right now.
I'm gonna stare you down. I can't do it either. I can't do it either. I'm a big fan of tampons and pads. Do you remember? I mean, growing up for me, my mom just wanted me to use pads, and I was like, what's this? And holding up a tampon. I guess I must have gotten it from school or someone. She's like, that's terrible. You're going to lose your virginity if you use that. Muslim myth right there.
Oh, that's really funny because, you know, in Love Inshallah, I write about my first time hearing about the birds and the bees from my mom, mm-hmm. right? And there's a time before that when I was like 10. How old are you in fifth grade? I was in fifth grade. Mm-hmm. And I had the flu the day that they did like the sex talk for all the girls.
You had the flu in quotation marks.
But I actually did. Like I wasn't able to go to school. And
I don't think I was allowed to go to school for the sex talk classes.
I know this definitely wasn't my mom restricting me because I also miss finals. That's all I know. But there was an Always sponsored pamphlet, and my mom just comes up to me, like, really, like, giggly, and she was like, here, you should read this, and then that's it.
And then you read it?
I just looked at it, and I was like, this is kind of weird, and she just said, I know.
How old were you when you got your period the first time?
16.
Holy moly, you were so old!
I know, I was like 16, 16 and a half.
I thought I was old. I got my period when I was 13, which is...
Now that's old.
Yeah. I felt like all my peers already had their period. And my mom did not let me go to the sex ed class. They kept me out of it. But the way she explained it to me, I think it was maybe 6 months before I actually started my period. She made me go get my biology book, and then she showed the diagram, and then she's like, and then it was super sterile, generic way of talking about periods. And then when I was talking to my sisters afterwards, my sisters and my cousins, no one else got the sex talk after me. So apparently it was implied that I was supposed to give everyone the sex talk. What? I don't know. Well, I don't understand why no one else got the talk. Well, I don't understand why it was just me.
Oh, that's funny.
Yeah. Did you have the sex talk with your siblings?
My sister got her period before me.
Shut up.
Yeah. And she
your
was
younger
like.
Sister.
Just a little younger. Yeah. She was like. I know. She screamed. She totally screamed. She was like, I'm dying. And then I was like, oh my God, I read about this. And then I showed her my pamphlet.
Oh, that's so cute. That is cute.
Always should sponsor us. Tampons.
You know who I want to sponsor us is there's those underwears that the period panties where you don't even need to wear pads or tampons anymore. You can just wear panties. I think they should sponsor us. Also, I want a pair, so I hope they
that
are
sounds
listening.
Like a diaper.
But they're apparently when you wear it, it's really thin. So it's kind of I forgot what the brand is called, but it's just like wearing a regular panty, and it's leak-proof panties, and you don't have to wear pads and tampons. It sounds like a miracle. I know, it's unbelievable. The thing is, this company just started, I think, in 2014, and then Forbes picked up on it. And then as soon as Forbes wrote an article about it, they started selling out. So now they have to do weekly orders because so many women want this product. And everyone that uses it rates it 5-star.
Oh, wow.
I know. It makes me very curious.
I'm totally missing out.
I know. I think we all are.
Well, I kind of want to know, did your mom supplement the absence of the sex talk?
No.
Not at all?
Mm-mm.
And, what did you think of that when you were a kid? Were you wait, I kind of want to know what's going on? Or were you cool, because that sounds scary?
I think I knew there was something. I knew, this is how I learned about sex.
Dun, 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 dun.
I think
Zara's
was
rubbing her hands right now.
I think I was 8. And I had this white friend who would come over with her Barbie dolls. And I wasn't allowed Ken dolls, but she was allowed Ken dolls. And the way she described sex was she would just have her Ken doll, roll around with my Barbie doll. And then I don't know if she said it was sex or not, but it was implied that something was happening there. It wasn't ever explained to me, but then I was just like, this must be something more than just rolling around with their clothes. Because she would make the dolls naked, right? She would make the Ken doll naked and the Barbie doll naked. They would roll around. I'm just really confused as to what's happening here. And that's how I learned about sex.
I'm dying right now because basically she just created her own porn.
Yeah, with Barbie dolls.
She just made her own porn.
On a separate note, she also had a black Barbie doll, and she would play with my white Barbie dolls and only let me play with a black Barbie doll because she said that only she was allowed to play with the white ones.
Oh, snap. What? That, ugh.
Microaggression. I know. Barbie dolls. Oh, Barbie dolls.
One time in our podcast, I remember. No, actually, it was when we were with Arun Rath. I was like, sometimes I say gross and have gross feeling, and Taz explains that's microaggression. And I love how that just automatically occurs, actually.
Yeah.
I was going to share a story, but now I can't remember what it was because I was so interested in your porn. I love porn.
As Zara gazes off distantly, picturing the two Barbie dolls rolling around naked.
Do you think periods make us impure? Because in Islam, you can't go into the mosque if you're on your period. You're not supposed to. You're not supposed to pray when you're on your period, which is kind of I don't have to do my prayer homework.
Yeah.
But also I was like, wait a minute. Why can't I pray to God? And how do you feel about that?
I think we talked about this in our Ramadan podcast because you can't fast when you're on your period. I don't know. I'm kind of ambivalent about about how Islam perceives women on their periods. I think, in some ways, I think it's really silly because I think we should be allowed to pray no matter what. And I think the way my mom had always explained to me when I expressed feminist angst about this, she would say, you know, you can still pray, just pray this, like, you can say surahs in your head and you can say whatever you remember, but you can't, like, physically pray. So then that made me feel a little bit better that I wasn't, like, absent of connection to God during those 7 days that I'm perioding, you know? And I think that made a difference to me. And now I'm just kind of, I don't know, I'm ambivalent about the impure thing because I think it's silly.
I was, like, weird giggling because I was, like, thinking about, like, well, you can't do this, but, like, you can go in a corner
right.
and be really far away from everyone.
Right.
Because there is something freakish about you when you're on your period. So just, like, recite surahs in your head, but, like, away from everyone.
My mom was the type of person who would make me go to the mosque even when I was on my period because we'd go to the mosque every day for Ramadan because she wanted me to at least listen to it. She wanted me to hear everything. So,
oh, that's lovely.
Yeah, it was. So I think my mom was a feminist in that way, whereas, like, I'm sure that the men in the mosque would say, like, you need to be 500 yards away from the mosque if there's even a touch of blood coming out of any part of you. Whereas, like, my mom was like, no, you need to hear this, so you need to sit here, and you can't use your period as an excuse to get out of it.
Oh, see, that's good, mom.
That is good, mom.
Yeah, like, that's, I'm like, oh, I bet you had good grades.
My Sunday school grades were not that good.
My religion school grades, not so good. Just because I was like, it's religion, I know it. Don't need to read it.
What have you been reading lately, Zara?
I am so upset about this article. There was an article in the New York Times that a lot of you may have read. It was about the ISIS rape of Yazidi girls. And it's horrifying. It's absolutely horrifying. It reveals that they're committing monstrous acts, which sound like genocide. And I was really struck by the article because first my dad mentioned it and he was in the car with me. We were going home and he was telling me the story. And then I kind of was tuning out a little bit because I hate hearing these stories and they take a toll on me. And also because I get angry that they have to take up my home space at all. They're already everywhere. I'm using pronouns and being nonspecific just because there's resistance from everywhere. You know, like when I say other people, there's the Islamophobia media machine. Mm-hmm. There's ISIS. There's, you know, and it's scary to talk about ISIS. And ISIS, we're scared of you. There you go.
But that's what they want. I think.
You're winning on that front, ISIS. We're scared of you. Like. That's working.
What stunned me about the article was that there was all these facts that I didn't know. So the article goes into very clear detail about how the Yazidi community was raided. And I didn't know that they had massacred over 5,000 people, 5,000 men. So they would go and look and see if the men were old enough to have armpit hair. And then if they did, then they would mass shoot them. They would take all the women. And they created a system of rape within ISIS culture. And they, well, oh my gosh, it was like they created departments to look into the study of who these Muslim men can rape. And they said because the Yazidi people weren't of the book that it was okay to rape them. And then they created, like, they took photographs of them and they created this incredible slave trade in Iraq and Syria. And it's just so stunning. I mean, to me, I see it as they were very much using Islam. They were like, okay, so we are going to put our agenda. And then they said, hey, we need some more not educated conservative men to come fight for us. Let's try to lure them with sex with young girls. And that's how we're going to get them. And it's working. So all these, like, really, they found this excuse to literally, like, build an army. So that's what's happening. They're building an army. They're trying to make excuses, take things out of Islam to build this army.
I mean, they're preying upon youth.
Mm-hmm.
They're preying upon youth. They're recruiting. They're actively recruiting. They have an entire model. I remember there was a Fast Company article that talked about how the ISIS model was similar to a startup model. They have a social media platform. They have a fatwa department.
Yeah, it's ridiculous. Also, we need a fatwa department.
Done.
Awesome.
They issue certifications of fatwa. Like, do you receive that in the mail?
I know. Like, who said this was okay?
You have been fatwa'd. I think we should do that.
Yeah, we should just start giving out certificates.
To the bacon lobby.
The bacon lobby. I mean, it's so terrible. Like,
so, like, what would our fatwa certification look like in comparison to ISIS's? Like, would ours just be, like, pink and purple? And it'd be, like, happy, like, you've been fatwa'd!
Yeah.
We're gonna get you, dun-dun-dun.
and it'll be nice and happy.
And what does ISIS, yeah. like, I don't understand. This is an army. And I think one of the things that I remember you pointing out was that it's good that we associate them with neo-Nazis. And I was afraid of that because I think like the average, you know, like the kid with a broad American education that fuses pop culture and politics together. And I'm afraid that when people read about ISIS, they're not going to make the distinction.
Yeah, I think that what I think is great about the distinction is that we do want the association of ISIS to be compared to neo-Nazis because we want them to vilified, whatever that word is. We want them to be looked at as villains. And I think neo-Nazis are across the board seen as villains, especially in light of the Holocaust. So, I mean, that's kind of what I see happening with the article. I couldn't actually finish the article, honestly.
It also is interesting to me that the article, without question, says ISIS, the Islamic State, and just continues to talk about ISIS and its practice of Islam without any, you know, real, like, this is not true.
Yeah.
This is not Muslim.
Yeah.
And it's interesting to me also that we also continue to use the word ISIS because other countries in the Middle East don't use the term ISIS. They refer to the group as being a part of regions. They don't name it by the religion.
Yeah. I think there was a move here domestically in the U.S. to, like, move away from calling the Islamic State that. But, I mean, this is what we were talking about earlier. Like, what do we call them?
The last thing I want to say about it along the lines of, like, what do we call them? I just think it's so interesting that with everything that's happening in Ferguson and the Oath Keepers arriving, I don't know if you guys know about this listening in, but the Oath Keepers are described, they describe themselves as a group focused on fulfilling the oath all military and police take to defend the Constitution against all enemies, foreign and domestic. And in the Washington Post, where this quote is taken from, they take time to mention on their website, the Oath Keepers are described as. They don't give them the Oath Keepers, patriots, comma, and continue. And that makes me mad. What the hell is that about?
It's about patriarchy. It's about white supremacy.
I mean, we don't do that with any kind of Muslim extremism.
Right. I mean, but that's how narratives are told in this country.
Which I hate the idea of, like, extremist Muslims anyway, because it just says, like, oh, they're very, very Muslim. Like, there's a spectrum.
Right. But I think I call white terrorists also extremists, too. I think it's just about, like, taking the narrative back and using their terms and placing it on other things that we think are more fitting of the term extremism.
When I read the article, it had this effect on me that I was like, how can I do what I do with this? Like, with this information? And I just want to say to people who are out there who also had that same experience reading this article, don't fall into that trap. Mm-hmm. It doesn't represent you. And maybe that's just my fear that people walk away with that. I don't know. I hope not. I hope that, yeah.
Hey, so you have an awkward Ask a Muslim for us, right? You were at a club.
Yeah, a little awkward. I was at an open mic with a new friend of mine, Sabine Sadiq. She is a fellow Muslim comedian hitting the SF scene from Chicago, and we're having fun hitting mics together, and kind of I'm introducing her to people around, and she and I were hanging out with some comics, and they were like, oh, you have that show, All Atheists Are Muslim or Muslims Are Atheists, and I was like, whoa, 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 whoa. It's One Direction. All atheists are Muslim. And
you mean like One Direction, like Zayn Malik?
I totally thought that when I said it too. Mm-hmm. Yes, like Zayn.
Okay.
He has such good hair. And he was like, wait, but you guys don't like really believe that, do you? Like in the heaven and hell shit? Like, do you really believe that? And then she and I both at the same time, she says, yes. And I say, no. And then she looked at me like, what? A tout brute? And that was awkward.
Yeah. It's all so awkward right now, right here. So.
When I first told you this story, you were holding your, like, Allah necklace, like, back away, Jin.
Yeah, I have an Allah pendant around my neck. Our listeners know this. Yeah, I was clutching it close. So you're Muslim, but you don't believe in heaven. And where do you go when you die? Yeah, so we had a really long philosophical question about this before we recorded this. But Zara, how did it go at the comedy show? What did Sabine say?
Afterward, she and I talked, and she was like, you know, how can you be Muslim if you don't believe in a heaven and a hell? And I said, it's not necessarily that I don't believe in it. I don't know that it looks like fire and brimstone and pearly gates. Like, I just don't see that. And I don't know what happens. Einstein says energy is constant.
That was so, like, for me, that sounded like so far left field. I mean, I think
he did say that about the afterlife. Einstein is quoted as saying, like, when somebody asks him, do you think anything happens after you die? And he says something must happen because energy is constant. So, you know, something leaves the body, like a soul maybe. But he didn't answer that.
Yeah, I've read somewhere there's some scientific research that your body loses like a fraction of weight after you die, and that there's some people that think that's like your soul leaving.
I think it's kind of funny that your soul weighs like that little. Like when people are, my soul is heavy. It's like, actually, it weighs less than a MacBook Air.
It's very small.
Also, I want to say my brown dad agrees with me. He also is ambivalent about that, calls himself a Muslim. Brown Muslim dad cred. K, backed up.
Well, I mean, that's nice that your dad's supportive of you, but...
Oh, way to just completely dismiss it.
But...
That's nice, but...
I don't know. I don't lump me in with Zara on her perspective. I definitely believe in a heaven and hell, but I also don't know what it's going to look like. And I think that's one of the kind of fun things about Islam, is that this is a journey. It's about education. It's about trying to figure out things. But then it's also, I mean, gosh, like belief. Like, that's so, why do you believe what you believe? Like, when mom died, I didn't know what to believe, right? So I didn't know where she went. And for me, it was comforting to know that there would be a heaven for her to go to.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I felt her presence. And I don't know if that's an Islamic thing or not. Like, there was just all these things that I just wasn't all of a sudden, like, able to believe. Like, I didn't know what to believe anymore, just because reality just totally shifted in that grief period. And what I had believed strongly, like, in books just didn't work anymore when you're all of a sudden having your mom appear in your dreams, you know? So it's just like, what is real? We won't know. And that's one of the miracles that exists in life, is that we're not supposed to completely know, and that we are supposed to have this unwavering belief in nothing, right? Like, we don't have facts, but we believe.
I do want to say that to that I agree. And I think it's important to mention that I'm not saying there's nothing. I'm saying I don't know. And I, in terms of feeling a presence and things like that, like, I don't know. And so I don't believe in the punishment component. You know, I don't think I'm going to go to hell for eating pork, or go to hell for, I just feel bad as a human being because of slaughterhouses that are fucked up.
Hey, if you don't believe in going, then can I have your points? You know, all those.
My heaven points?
Yeah. You know, those suave points that you got for converting your friends when you were like 7. Can I take those?
Persians call them savab. I have accrued 3 million something. Because I converted my friends. It's in my infidel husband column. Okay. If there's a heaven, why would I give you my heaven
points? I'm just saying, if those points are available, I'd like, if you could transfer your points, I'd like them.
I'll tell you what, if we show up and Allah is like, welcome. It's too bad about you, Zahra. And he is flipping through my file, and then he was like, oh, damn, you do extra credit. And I'm like, yes. Yes, God, 3 million points. And he's like, and all these people you converted in your show, all atheists are Muslim, asking all these important questions. I'd be like, yes, God, yes. And he'd be like, it turns out you have like 30 million heaven points. Just on technicality, I can't send you that way. Do you want to give some to Taz? And then I would be like, that actually would double my heaven points, wouldn't it? And he'd be like, yeah, it'd be a huge good deed.
Thank you.
Yeah,
I would appreciate
I'd pass
that.
Him over.
Yeah, thanks. My awkward ask Muslim is... So it happened a couple weeks ago. We were in Los Angeles. There's this organization called Grand Performances, and they invited a few of us to have dinner with Yuna, the most amazing hijabi singer-songwriter out there.
I'm such a fan.
I'm such a fan. And on the invitation, it was invite only. On the invitation, it said, don't bring food, but please bring a bottle of wine.
I was like,
I don't drink, so I'm not going to bring wine. But then I was like, well, and the guest of the evening doesn't drink either, so why are we bringing alcohol to, you know, this space where this
woman...
Yeah,
that's so weird.
It was so weird. And then...
did you ask her about that?
I didn't ask her about that. I feel like drinking habits are a personal choice of people, so I didn't ask her. But, like, so you know how wine bottles are, like, really fancy looking and glass looking?
They're so pretty.
They're so pretty. So, like, I brought in, like, a jug of Trader Joe's sweet tea to the party. Like, everyone's dressed all fancy, bringing all these, like, wine bottles. I'm walking in with this jug of non-alcoholic... tea, and I felt so awkward. I was like, do I hold it in a certain way to make it more attractive, or should I like hide it behind my back? And Phil, you and Quincy were both there, and they were just like, it's fine, it's cool, I'm non-alcoholic. I was like, I don't know. So anyways, I basically ran in, dropped my drink, and like distanced myself from it as far as possible.
That actually must be so awkward and also unfair, because I don't know how many times I've gotten away with a really quick hostess gift because it's a really gorgeous bottle of wine.
Right, right.
And you can never do that.
I think I just need to start stocking up on really gorgeous bottles of soda. I don't know. Does that happen?
Artisanal soda bottles.
I'm just going to buy those really expensive sparkling waters and just, you know, take them around with me. I don't know. It's so awkward. I think this whole, like, BYOB is one of the most awkward questions to ask Muslim people at the parties. But it was particularly awkward because it was Yuna.
What would make it better instead of BYOB? Like, ugly halal bottles welcome? Speaking of Yuna. This is how big of a fangirl we are.
Yeah. So on to next segment, Good Muslim Award. I'm giving my award to Yuna because I got the chance to talk to her that night. And she's so awesome.
Oh, I'm so envious.
We got to talk about her music and how she has this new album coming out. She's played a couple of the songs, and it sounds kind of more Erykah Badu-ish. So I was asking her about her process and what it was like to be a Muslim woman making this music. And she was talking about how she had just gone back to her country of Malaysia. No, I think it is Malaysia. So we got to talk about Ramadan because she just got back from being home for Ramadan.
I wish you recorded all of this.
I know. I invited her to be on the podcast.
Yes,
so
please.
Hopefully she'll hear this podcast and say, like, yeah, I'll totally be a guest on that podcast. I don't know. I just really love her music. And I was talking to her actually about falling in love and breaking up. And we had this whole conversation. I was like, yeah, I have a column where we talk about that. And I was like, your first album was my breakup album and I can't listen to it anymore. And she's like, oh, I'm sorry about that. I was like, I'm so excited. You have new albums coming out so I can listen to those now. Oh, she's just so cool. What I love about Yuna particularly is we were talking about what it means being Muslim women making art. And she was talking about how, like, that men want her to be submissive and they can't, like, deal with her, like, having a voice and going on tour. And she's like, I need someone that's going to be supportive. And I thought it was really fascinating to have that conversation with her.
Yeah, please bring her in. And can she also sing all of it?
Yeah. Her voice is dynamic.
It's gorgeous. When I first heard Yuna, I remember that first moment. Because I, like, grabbed Duncan and was like, oh, my God, listen to her voice. It's amazing. Yuna touring the country, bringing her Muslim voice into every arena.
Oh, my gosh, you're right. She's totally creeping Sharia. People love her, and they don't even know that she's Muslim.
My favorite segment, creeping Sharia. Dun, 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 dun. I went to a convert store.
Oh, my gosh, did you get converted?
I bought conversion. I didn't have to get converted.
Was it like a Ramadan kit in a box? Or
actually, that could have been there, except that it would be like paisley and on a dress.
Right. So it was a boutique.
Yes, it was a boutique on 4th Street in Berkeley, which is like super boutique-y, bougie, like fancy, fancy.
So why do you think a store called Convert is creeping Sharia?
Well, let me read this description for you from their Facebook description. Gypsy05 for Fall, which I'm assuming is a tag, a label they carry, has arrived at Convert, celebrating patterns that are replete with all that's beautiful and exotic, all brought to life in an earth-friendly way. Experience these new styles here and at Convert in Berkeley, soon our SF store.
I have no idea what they're selling.
when you go look, it's all the exotic patterns, a mix of everything oriental and exciting. I just think it's funny that it's called Convert.
I'm so confused by this name.
Like, because it's all that, like, Pier 1 exoticism, right?
Mm-hmm.
And commodification. Mm-hmm. But then they make it religious.
Yeah, why, like, I don't, like, what are we converting? That's what I want to know.
Like, if I wear it, am I just like, bam, Buddhist, bam, Muslim, bam, Christian, bam, like.
Wouldn't that be awesome, though, if we could do that?
Can I take that wardrobe with me when I die?
No.
Damn it.
Okay, so my creeping story is, did you know that all the lamb that comes out of New Zealand is halal or another zabiha? I think zabiha is the technical term when you're cutting meat in a holy way.
Oh, this is where we need Saqib from our Ramadan episode.
I had no idea about this. I think what I read was that apparently New Zealand beef is like really, really good and it gets exported all around the world. So because of that, they make it zabiha, but they don't tell anyone it's zabiha. So it's like super creeping sharia.
That's awesome.
And the meat that is like certified, I think it's an expensive process and only some companies are able to get the halal sticker placed on it. That's like an extra step. But the default meat there is zabiha.
There, that's the best way to convert people is because everybody has to eat and you are what you eat.
Mm-hmm.
You're eating halal. You're eating Muslim meat. Everyone in New Zealand is Muslim.
I know.
Well, everyone who eats lamb.
What I read was they do it so that the meat can be eaten by Muslims and non-Muslims. I was like, this is great. So now that we have a department of fatwas that
issues out pink certificates
of fatwas.
I imagine purpley bubble letters. What do you imagine?
Yeah, I picture that too. I picture lots of stars and moons.
I did too, with hearts.
Yeah.
But like sad faces that are like, sorry, fatwad.
Fatwad. Who do you want to give a fatwa to?
The damn internet.
Oh.
There are all these photos of me in flag hijab.
But you, we talked about the flag hijab like 4 years ago, and you were pretty happy about it.
I thought it like, oh, this is like bold.
Okay, just to give a clarification, Zara took these press photos where she was wearing a flag hijab.
In 2011.
For press she did around All the Atheists Are Muslim.
Yeah.
And then we had a conversation about it because I was like, I don't know about that. But if you like it, that's cool.
It's so lovely to have you say things like that, and I want you to just, like, call me and be like, sorry, you're being an idiot. Don't do this.
Well, okay, so, like, my issue with the flag hijab is that I think it's this, like, forced form of patriotism, and it's saying to people, like, yeah, I'm Muslim, but I'm also a patriot, and I think that, like, right after 9/11 happened, there was this forced form of patriotism that happened right afterwards. So everyone was wearing flags on everything, and I think, for me, when I see a flag hijab, which I've seen a few over the years, actually.
There are a lot.
There's been a lot. Yeah.
If you wear hijab, you do have to carry around in your closet a flag from every country.
I actually saw a woman. This was at work. She was wearing a hijab that was like an American flag and the English flag on the same hijab. And I was like, oh, this is like super colonial. All she needed was a French hijab. Then we would have been set.
I guess I should give the origin story behind it. When I took these photos, you know, you hire a photographer to take high resolution photos and you have them for like an hour. And I got so excited to get like all this flag paraphernalia. And this was way before flag hijab was a thing. Nobody had done it. And it was the 10-year anniversary of 9/11. And there were all these questions about like Muslims and can they be American and 9/11 and patriotism and what does that mean? And so I wanted to have fun as a satirist. I wanted to be like, haha. So I went and like, of course, in my hometown, there's a store that just in the middle of March carries a ton of flags. There was like a flag purse. There was a flag. There were little mini flags. There was like a bobble flag. There was a flag bathrobe. Like there was like just flag everything.
I want to go there.
We will go there.
Okay.
It's right next to the Convert store. I flag from every country.
Not ironic, but so ironic.
Just wait one more year. And I took all these photos, and most of them, like, it's clear the sarcasm. And then there were a couple that the photographer was like, you know, try this pose, try coming this way. And I was like, ooh, do I look hot like this? Do I look hot like that? You know? And Then when I saw them all, I showed them all to my producer. I was a young pup Muslim performer. And this is actually before I met my activist community that also got me into activism. And, of course, my publicist is like, yes, do this. So I have, like, one or two that look very serious. And my one bad review of my show, that it was like, why is this show about a Muslim woman dating? None of this answers for 9/11. And then they slap on my, like, serious face with, like, nice. The flag and hijab. And, like, and I just was like, it's a light show. That's the whole point. Why do I have to? And this is coming up for me now because after our BuzzFeed article, clearly people have been researching our names because all these photos now that, like, weren't when I typed in my name didn't pop up, now pop up. Immediately. And damn it, internet. I'm going to send the internet, which I guess is
the you can creator. Send them an angry letter full of Muslim rage.
But who do I send it to?
And full of Muslim crazy. Al Gore, he invented the internet.
All right, we'll officially give it to Al Gore. I wasn't sure if as a comedian, is that an old joke? Are we over that joke? But like, okay, yeah.
Yeah,
we'll keep that
Al Gore.
One.
Yeah. I want to issue a fatwa. Speaking of flags.
Tell me your fatwa, yeah.
I want to issue a fatwa to George Zimmerman. Particularly this time he was in the news again. I don't understand why he consistently is in the news, but he's in the news again. This time for those, I think we talked about in our last podcast, there is now a shop in Florida that sells guns and they don't want Muslims to come there because this guy is stupid. So this guy who owns this shop in Florida, he said, "I will not arm and train those who wish to do harm to my fellow patriots." And he said this while standing in front of a Confederate flag. And of course, CARE responded and called on the Department of Justice to investigate the store for violating federal laws that prohibit discrimination, which is great. But now, because Zimmerman heard this, now Zimmerman is making these paintings. So I think he created one Confederate flag painting and he turned them into prints. And he's selling them to raise money for this other guy's legal fees. And it's so frustrating, and I just wish George Zimmerman would get out of the news because I'm just as he just doesn't need to be in the news anymore.
This story is so twisted on so many levels.
So many levels.
And I'm afraid, like, what if CARE runs out of money? What if CARE runs out of funding?
If CARE runs out of funding, then I think you and I should make some paintings and sell some prints and fundraise it for CARE.
What would we do? What would they look like? Send us your ideas.
Yeah. Send us your ideas. We could do, like, we could reappropriate Zimmerman's art and then do a painting on top of that. And it could be fun. In fact, you know, to all of our listeners that are artists and painters, how about you all create art that counters this stupid piece of art? And send us your pictures because we want to see the pictures and we'll post our favorite ones up on our website.
Yeah.
Are you going to do a painting?
I am. I hope that people will be able to make sense of whatever it is that I draw.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm also going to do a painting.
Regardless of how good of a painter you are, you should do this. I'm doing it. I'm not a painter.
Yeah.
I'm going to go for it.
Yeah. Let's just go for it. Let's just create anti-Zimmerman, anti-racism, anti-white supremacy art that's going to go against this stupid, stupid case going on down in Florida. We'll have a link to the full article on this and all of the things that we talked about today. Zara, do you have anything coming up?
You can check me out as a guest on Zeki Hassan's podcast, the movie film podcast with Zeki and Brian. And I have a show coming up at Dartmouth.
For me, I am in this zine that just came out at the Oakland Asian Cultural Center. It's called I Am Warrior, so I have a piece in there. The other thing that I'm super excited about, for people that are listening, I have a music blog called Mishti Music, and I released a mixtape about Black Lives Matter, and I was very much searching for South Asian and Asian American musicians that are singing about the movement. So the whole mix has people like the Kominas and King Khan, who are South Asian artists, but then we also got some music in there by Tef Po and T-Dubbo, who are Ferguson-based artists. So I wanted to really create a mix that kind of honors the voices of the people on the ground, but also shows support and solidarity by Asian American musicians for the movement. So be sure to check that out. It's on our Mixcloud, mixcloud.com/Mishti Music. And I will also have that up on our site.
I also have a column, My Infidel Husband. Check it out.
Oh, I have a column too. Radical love. Radical love. Be sure to check it out. Thank you to the San Francisco Writers Grotto for letting us use their podcast space. It's so great to have community spaces like this. If you have a community space, please think about making it a podcast studio because people like us would love it. And be sure to comment and like us on iTunes because we need those stars. So
star.
Please star us so that we can get more likes.
And if you don't like us, just put in 5 stars. 5 stars lets us know.
Yeah. Yeah.
Peace out.
Assalamualaikum.
Alaikum assalam.
Thanks for listening to the Good Muslim, Bad Muslim podcast hosted by Taz Ahmed and Zara Norbash. You can follow Taz on Twitter at TazzyStar, that's TAZZYSTAR, and Zara at ZaraNu, that's ZaHRANOO. The show is produced and edited by Quincy Sarah-Smith, and you can find us on the web at GoodMuslimBadMuslim.com. To follow the conversation, please use the hashtag GoodMuslimBadMuslim. Taz is still single. Still single.
Still single.
Still single.